Accession number 19989, Reel 1.
Mr. Haraway, Reel 1, could you tell me a bit about your family background and in particular whether there was any tradition of military service in the family?
Well, actually, my side of the family, no. No military service, they were all naval. I had a couple of uncles that were chief petty officers, one an ordinary seaman. Oh, I had two cousins in the First World War. They were army, but they both served in India during that war. One was a machine gun sergeant, and the other was a PT instructor. But other than that, I think I broke away from the naval tradition of the family and joined the army. 1925, I joined at Bodmin, and joining as a boy, we had to state which particular battalion we needed. So I joined the first, not knowing, of course, that within 18 months I'd be in India. I stayed at Bodmin only one day. That was the day, I can still see it, the 13th of January 1925, I went to Bodmin. And on the 14th of January, I came home. And on the 16th of January, I landed in Guernsey in the 2nd Battalion DCLI. And I stayed there until September 1926. That was a year and 8 months. And I left with the draft for India, and I joined early October 26. I joined the 1st Battalion at Lucknow.
Was there a particular reason why you decided to go to the Army rather than the Navy?
No particular one at all. It's just, I suppose, at the time that I somehow fancied the army. I don't know. And joining as a band boy, I had no knowledge at all of music in any way. So, which obviously any bandmaster will tell you they prefer to start from scratch and not have to sort of overbear on things that they've already learnt, which, well, that particular bandmaster that might not agree with. If they got something starting from ground level, they teach them their way.
From ground level up?
That's right, yes. And of course, eventually, when I finished up as a corporal, I was teaching the people that they were coming along in the method that I'd been taught by the particular bandmaster.
Did your family mind that you decided to go into the army rather than the navy?
Well, I didn't even ask them, I just did it. And I don't think they did, not in any way. This was just a case of, well, it's there, and around about 1925 and 26, after the First World War, of course, when the country was just getting on its feet, there was a also a lot of work about. And when they then were sort of reforming the services, there was an opportunity for anybody with a bit of push. And I said, oh, I saw it. Although I was only 14 at the time. And that's what I did.
Had you ever thought of doing anything in civil life? Had you got an idea of what you might
do? No, I can't say that I did, because I left school in December 1924. I was 14 then. I left on my 14th birthday. And, well, in 40 days after, on my attestation papers, it says age on enlistment, 14 years, 40 days. So I just went on from there, that was all. It was an opening, and as I saw it, well, I had a couple of chums who another Salt Ash fella, he'd already joined the DCLI, and I thought to myself, well, it's good enough for him, it's good enough for me, sort of thing. Because in those days, work was work, a job was a job, sort of thing, as I saw it. And anybody that going into the army went, especially after the war when they were reforming everything, it was an opening you either take it or leave it. But if you took it, you had to sort of, well, make a something of it.
Make the most of it.
Yeah, either go ahead to make promotion or be one of the gang, sort of thing. Well, when we were, I must admit that the bandmaster that we had out in India, Goebbels he was called, we always swore blue, he was a German and left the O out of his name. That was typical band, or shall we say military humour. But he was a bit of a harridan, he was, and it was practice this, practice that, and practice that, and you never didn't ever really have an instrument out of your hand for a time. But it stood us in good stead afterwards when we looked back on it and said, well, we used to call him everything, and most impolite, I must say. But when we came to find out, you found out, well, it's something I've learned, I know, I'll never forget it, and this is it.
Stays with you for life.
Yeah.
When you got to Bodmin, to the recruiting office, what did you actually have to do in order to sign on?
Well, I went, first of all, I don't know whether you know Bodmin.
Not terribly well.
Not the what we call the depot. It's the keep, they call it, but we always, ex-DCLI, refer to it as the depot. You just went up to the office and you met the recruiting officer. And before anything was done about it, you were sent to the medical officer. You went through an examination. If you were fit and passed, he says, yes, well, I remember my attestation papers were marked fit for service in any part of the world. So you then went back to the recruiting officer. And he went through the thing. He took the oath of bear true allegiance to His Majesty King Force, and something which I always thought was a joke, you received the king shilling.
You still got it?
No, I spent
Did you?
The same day, I think, at the canteen for a cup of tea. But it was just one of those things, that's all.
Was it a very thorough medical examination?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
What did you have to do to pass the medical?
Well, you slipped off, first of all, and you had the MO, medical officer there, and he inspected you, and that's the only word you can use, expected as against examined, from top to bottom, teeth, everything, even your toenails and all that. And then marked, well, fit for, as I say, fit for service in any part of the world. And the next day, I had a railway warrant. I had two really. One from Bodmin to Saltash. I lived here then, and on the Thursday night, I had to go to catch a midnight boat at Weymouth for Guernsey.
Were you in uniform by that
no.
stage? No, you're still in civilian clothes.
All my uniform was made for me. I was so small. Even my overcoat, I had a special overcoat when I got there. Got in. I had no kit or anything for Bodmin. I was kitted out at Guernsey.
Where were you stationed in Guernsey? Was it in St. Peter Port?
Oh, yes, Fort George.
Fort George.
Fort George, St. Peter Port.
What was the battalion doing there?
Well, it was the station, shall we say. You know, before he has a battalion here at Devonport in Raglan Barracks, others at Crown Hill and things like that. It was just part of the thing. Were they a station? We'll call it. If there was any particular reason for it, well, I just couldn't know. They had just moved from the Army of Occupation at Cologne. In October 24, they left Cologne and we came to Guernsey. And at they were there at Guernsey for 3 years. And then they moved somewhere. Well, I didn't know them, because I was away out in India with the 1st Battalion by that time.
Did you hear any stories about what they'd been doing in Cologne when you were with them?
Well, not really as such. Well, it's like everything. They had their particular places they used to go, passing time. One thing, a place, the camp, they used to do a month annual camp. And I do remember them talking about one camp, WAHN, I can still see it, one camp, where they fired their rifle courses and things like that. As each year the band had so much instruction, rifle instruction, that came as a part of an accepted thing.
Did they say anything about how they got on with the Germans in Cologne?
Well, it's a funny thing. There were three or four German wives of the troops. So the two married them there. One in particular, Lance Corporal Ray, he was married to a German lady. Well, of course, the present one too, Chalky White, his wife is German.
That's post-war, isn't it? Post-Second World War.
Yeah, Second World War. Mm. But I say that's only by the way. But apparently they did. They got on quite well with the Germans, from what I gather, and this, that, and the other thing. But then, of course, when they left there, that was they thought they left their love there as well with them, sort of thing. But in Guernsey, well, I was there for about a year and 8 months. And, well, there was quite a number of characters, shall we say, in Guernsey.
Really? Yeah. Tell me about them.
Well, there was one I can't always... I think she was a fictional character, really. They used to call her Kobo Alice. Well, of course, I was only 15 then, so it didn't mean a thing to me.
You were still innocent in that time.
Yeah, too innocent, I'm afraid. But Kobo Alice, when we went on holiday out there, we got around in the car. We went out to Kobo Bay. It was the other side of the island from Fort George, rather. And it used to tickle me. We used to talk about it. And my chummy's the ex-Navy, he said to me one day, "Who the hell is this Kobo Alice you're talking about?" So I said, "It's only a fictional character, but shall we say a lady of easy virtue, put it that way."
Popular with the troops.
That's right, sorry. No, it's a... But then, of course, in 1926, when I left there and went to the 1st Battalion at Guernsey, that was, out there, you hardly saw any white women at all or anything like that. Because, the married quarters, the wives and the officers' wives and all, they were beings apart, sort of thing. But being in the band, we did get around to civilian clubs and all that, playing at civilian clubs. And later, when we moved from there, we went from Lucknow to Barrackpore and Lebong. Well, half of the battalion, the headquarters of the battalion, was at Lebong. But the band was at Barrackpore, which was about 12 miles outside of Calcutta. And there we could say hundreds of various engagements. The band were always doing one thing on the Calcutta races, officers' clubs, Tollygun races, and all this sort of thing in season. And, not very long ago, they showed a picture here of Calcutta. And they had a part of Tollygun's club there. And I was sitting there watching, and there was a large tree. And that's where the band used to fix up playing there during the Tollygunge clubs. Yeah. The club, they ran their own race days. And of course, the band, we were a white band, we were employed, like in Calcutta races. And if over the Christmas, season there, especially on Boxing Day. That was the big day in Calcutta races, because all the English jockeys were out there.
So it's a very grand occasion.
Oh yes, definitely. And the various things out there around Calcutta, it's a centre for jute, and the jute wallers were somehow always Scotch people. And we had at that time, it was the busiest time of the year for the band, especially because we were not only Christmas time for ourselves. On Boxing Day, it was officers' clubs, dances, and things like this. New Year's Eve, it was, anywhere sort of thing. You could put the band would... Sometimes we had two dance bands out at various functions and all this sort of thing. And the Jute Wallace, the football teams and all this sort of thing. And this was around the... Christmas, and that on New Year's Day, there was what they were told a proclamation parade. All units in throughout India had this, and he'd parade on the what they call the Maidan out in Calcutta, the battalions, the various battalions there, for a proclamation of India. I don't know what proclaiming, but. We never went into that because the rest of the day was all sort of thing. It was a day off. But it was a recognised thing through all the battalions through in India. On the, I suppose, somewhere in the back of my mind, I got an idea. It was something to do with proclaiming Queen Victoria as the Empress of India.
Sounds plausible.
On the 1st of January. And after this parade, the rest of the day was yours sort of thing. The only people on duty were those guards and things like that. That was only one thing at the...
I take you back a bit to when you arrived in Guernsey. You were a new recruit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You said that you'd had friends who joined the army. Had they joined as boys as well?
Well, this one in particular, yes. And
did you meet up with him when you got to Guernsey?
Oh, yes, but he was only there for a month. Because he'd been with the 2nd Battalion about five. He joined in August 1924, and he was at the age, he was past 15, and he was on draft for India. And I got to the 2nd Battalion in January 25, and he left for the 1st Battalion in Lucknow in February, a month afterwards. I was there a month with him.
And then he went.
And then he went. And then it would be in May. We had another Salthouse, Goad, he was called. He joined. And he and I stuck together all the time then, because we were two of an age. I was about 3 months older than he was. But at 26, we both came on home. He came from Salthouse here. And... We were on a month's draft leave together. We went to India together. We stuck there together. We were Lance Corporals together. And we came home in 1933 on 6 months' leave together. And he lost his mother while we were home here on leave. So I went back about a month before him. And when I got back, that was the beginning of my medical trouble.
What happened when you first arrived? You arrived in Guernsey on the boat from Weymouth.
Yeah.
Was there a reception committee waiting for you when the boat docked?
No, there was a corporal there.
Corporal at the dockside.
Corporal Tuckwell, he was called. I can see him now. Afterwards, he was the bugle major. He just took us up to Fort George.
Oh, there was more than one of you then?
Two of us, yeah.
Two of you.
The other one was a Plymouth boy called Fitzgerald. He, incidentally, he died at Bareilly in, would it be 1934, I would say, somewhere there. But anyway, he died, and he's buried in a military cemetery at Brayley. But as I said, they're just the two of us, and we were met there by this Corporal Tuckle and taken to the depot and handed over to the band, the NCO in charge of the boys at the band. And then we sort of, well, we had breakfast, which, such as it was.
What was it then?
Well, they call it liver. Oh, God. Oh, God, that's... I guess I've never tasted liver like it before, but they were nonsense. But that was the point about it. And then afterwards, after we had time to sort of get washed and whatnot, we were taken to SEAL's orderly room and marched, both of us there, absolutely as raw as you could make them.
Still in civilian clothes?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
We marched to the orderly room, and SEAL's orderly room at 10 o'clock in the morning, always, and interviewed us and put the fear of hell in us, I suppose, really speaking. Seeing SEAL was God, as far as we were concerned.
Do you remember what he said to you?
No, I'm afraid I don't. I think mind you, with one or two SEALs afterwards, I remember what they've said to me. But this is just a point. And then afterwards, we went to quartermaster stores and we'd issue with a kit. And all my unit of stuff there had to be made. I was no giant, as I still am not. And even my overcoat, I had an overcoat had to be made.
So regimental tailors measured you up, got to work.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How long did it take them to produce you a set of uniform?
Not long. Well, actually speaking, I suppose they took the smaller size and altered it. That's all.
So they took the smaller size and cut them down.
Yeah, well, taken. You see that the two sides of a tunic was separate to the back. It was stitched at the back. And I said, of course, I wouldn't say it, that I can only sort of assume that they altered what they had there. The trousers, well, that was a simple matter. But it took about 2 months to get an overcoat for me because that had to be made.
Did you find the uniform comfortable?
Not at first. Because the army surge putting us on the legs and such, like, you know, the rough surge.
So it rubbed you a bit.
Very rough. Mm-hmm. But it was something that you got used to practically in no time at all. And at that time, just after the war, we have what we call the universal button, the button with the coat of arms on it. Well, come April 1925, we all had to hand our best tunic into the tailor's shop, and they took these buttons off and replaced them with regimental buttons, a particular Cornwall buttons in our case, and collar badges. And we did away with the green webbing belt, and we were issued with the white, and they got back to peacetime dress. That would be April 25.
How did you get on with the boots?
Like everything, it took me a time. Because, well, I only take a size 6 now. But at that time, my size was about 3 or 4. Well, the smallest size they had in the store was 5. 5'5", I can still see it. 5 length and 0.5 width, sort of thing. But that's what I wore. But eventually, I got used to that sort of thing. That was all. And because we didn't, as boys, do a lot of marching in the 2nd Battalion. It was when we got to the 1st Battalion that we were sort of, you're in the band and that's it, you march with the band and all this.
How many boys were there with the 1st Battalion when you, with the 2nd Battalion, when you joined them in Guernsey, how many other boys were there in the band?
Well, I think, actually speaking, I won't say that this is actually true, but I imagine somehow or other that you were allowed 16 boys. And I think in the 2nd Battalion, when I got there, including, of course, the 1st Battalion boys went there first. There was about 12, I think. As a matter of fact, I got a photograph.
Were they mostly from Cornwall or were
no,
they?
No, all over the place.
All over the place.
Is you a second? No, I got a photograph somewhere. Of course, I can't walk with that. There's all those there.
Just take one of these photographs. Yeah. Then. Well, look, I'm not part of that.
Even now, I can remember all these, the names of all of them.
Are they dressed in football kit?
No, this is PT. Just physical training. This was taken in the moat at Port George, Guernsey. This is the wall here, look.
Right. That's the stone wall behind you.
That is Sergeant Woozy.
Sitting in the middle.
Yeah. He was the instructor.
How'd you get on with him? Was he a strict man?
The understatement of the year.
He was very strict.
Very, yeah, as a PT instructor, yes.
He's a PT instructor. You say he's a PT instructor?
Yeah.
Yes.
He was not banned, of course. He was a company, one of the companies he belonged. Mm. But he was a qualified PT instructor. He wore the cross swords over his...
Did you do a lot of PT?
Well, every afternoon except Thursday and Saturday, and not Sunday. Four days a week.
How long would you take on a session of PT?
3/4 hour from 2 o'clock until 2:45.
What sort of things did you do?
All sorts. Horse work, wall thing, and over the ladders, and cross-country running, swimming, everything.
Was there a particular emphasis upon one aspect of it? Were they going for strength or endurance or agility or three?
That was just, physical training, all different exercises, groundwork and horse work and all that sort of thing.
Were you fit when you joined?
Well, I was fit for service in any part of the world. That was it. Well, I played a lot of football, you see.
You played a lot of football. Was that at school or...
No. When I was at school, I was useless. But when I went into the army, incidentally, here's some other ones.
All right. So you...
That is Beadle.
Yes. I've been interviewing him as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Chalky White.
Yes.
They were both boys in the battalion when I was a Lance Corporal.
All right, yes.
But anyhow, that's by the way. Mm. But, and this is another fella. He was an A company of the first, out in the 1st Battalion while I was there. He's 90.
And is he still in good condition?
Oh, reasonably, yes. Mm. For that age, as you can see, that was taken at Light Infantry Association about 12 months ago. But that's about all it. That's by the way.
And so, you were reasonably fit when you joined the army, and you were trained up by playing a lot of football.
Oh, I was fit, right? Definitely.
Yeah.
And I played football. I played football for the band and the company. And the battalion. Although I know I'm no giant, but I play regularly. And, that would be right up to 1933. And, in between times, this is more personal than the thing, you know. I picked up a tapeworm, and in the summer of 1931, I went into hospital at Nynatal, the hill station, with pneumonia.
How did you manage to catch that? Was that being at altitude, perhaps?
No, but it was quite warm, and reasonably warm in the hill station. But anyhow, I was in the hospital, and while I was there, they discovered that I had this tapeworm, you see, and traced it back. They said that I obviously picked it up at Lucknow, because Lucknow was well known for the tapeworm business, where it began there, sort of thing, simply because it was caused by badly cooked pork and thing, I guess.
Had you been aware of anything wrong in the...
No, there was nothing wrong. As far, I'm going to say, it went on, and having just had pneumonia, you see, and they'd been treating me, I remember the M.O. Holt, Major Holden, I can still see it. Why do I remember these names? And he said, well, you're too weak to be treated for that, so we'll have to leave it until you're stronger. But the point was, it ceased there. There was no treatment whatsoever. And, well, I got a letter...